Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
Get ready to take notes because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson. Hey, teacher,
leave them kids alone. Welcome to Education America, where we're working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. And boy, what a conversation we have had with Dr. Carderas these last 2 weeks, right, Abigail?
Absolutely. It's been incredible.
It's really been incredible. And we were very fortunate to get Dr. Carderas to just stay on a little bit longer with us after we were with him this last time. And so we are going to actually play a clip of a conversation that we had that's probably about 12 minutes long or 14 yep. minutes long, something like that. And then we are going to go ahead and then have another discussion about the content of that clip. So this is Dr. Carderas of Stony Brook Medicine. Is that right?
Yes,
and
he's also
talk a little
the
bit about his background.
Absolutely. So he is a psychiatrist who has been opening several treatment centers around the country, working with screen addiction in children. Has also written several books. If listeners are aware, he has written a book called Glow Kids. It is absolutely excellent, and he has given his time. If you've not listened to those conversations, please go on back in the podcast and take a listen. He is an absolute professional with loads of experience. And the upcoming clip is about the discussion regarding why is it that we're seeing such an increase in ADHD diagnoses in children. This is a real issue that I think most parents and most schools are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listeners, we have, again, Dr. Carderas has been so generous with his time. And one of the topics that we had just the privilege of discussing with him, and he's going to chat a bit more about with us today, is if you are a parent, you are seeing that so many kids are struggling with attention deficit disorder. And where does that come from? Dr. K has quite a bit of clinical experience with this. And Dr. K, I'd just love for you to chat a bit with our listeners about this phenomenon of rise in ADHD and where could it be coming from?
Well, I think it's clearly there's been some great research done by Dr. Christakis, who was also the editor of the Journal of Pediatrics, and he was a University of University of Washington researcher. He did ADHD research with television back in the 90s, and what his research had showed back then was that for the key developmental windows of between ages 2 and 6, for every hour of TV watching that a child or an infant did, there was a 10% higher in likelihood of developing ADHD further down the road. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if a 3-year-old watched 3 hours of television a day, they had a 30% more likely increase of developing ADHD. They did that same research with interactive iPads in 2010, and the effect is greatly magnified, because while television created, again, was overstimulating and created a stimulation dependence, which is what ADHD is. It's the brain is now needs that stimulation to stay focused. That's why we give stimulant drugs to children, unfortunately, too frequently, because the stimulant kind of helps sort of calm down the overly stimulated mind. Paradoxically,
yes.
The iPad was now creating, amplifying this television ADHD effect, because it was much more stimulating, many more bells and whistles. And what I tell parents sometimes is, just think about even what yesteryear's children's television was compared to today's children. Yes. Visual medium. Think about Mr. Rogers and one camera slowly tracking Mr. Rogers as he sits and he puts up his sneakers on and zip, zip. It was very, the pacing of it was very slow, so you can track and follow it. Now, when you look at any kind of digital media or kids' media, it's rapid cuts and a lot of bells and whistles, lights, and it, like Nickelodeon will have a lot of, they look like MTV videos, because they know that they have to increase the amplitude of the bells and whistles to maintain the child's attention, because the child is now being desensitized to X level of stimulation. Now they need 2X level of stimulation to keep their attention, and then eventually 3X and 4X. And so the same thing has happened societally, where if you look at something like an action movie from the 1970s, think Steve McQueen or think any kind of older action movie, you had dialogue, you had slower moving scenes, and then you would have a car chase maybe half of the way through the movie. Now think of a Marvel movie today. It starts off with explosions and car crashes or Mission Impossibles, and that's because the filmmakers have understood now that the audience doesn't have the attention span anymore for intermittent adrenaline surges, that the average viewer will tune out if there's too much long dialogue. I had studied media, and one of the things that they talked about was in the 50s, they used to have, they had studied the average attention span of the average adult back then was about 15 minutes, and they knew that they had to have what was called a startle response or startle effect to sort of wake up the viewer, because the viewer would start to kind of drift 15 minutes into a show, and that would be when they would do the commercial. So they would do a little bit of a startle thing to wake you up, and a commercial interruption. And then what they found is, as you went from the 1950s to the 60s to the 70s, that startle response got shorter and shorter. It went from 15 minutes to 12 minutes to 10 minutes to 8 minutes, because they found that the attention spans were getting more and more shorter. And so now, essentially, the whole show is one startle response. The whole show will start with a car chase, an explosion, a light, because they can't even get you to the 15-minute point. They can't get you to the 5-minute point because we've been, all of us have become sort of overly stimulated and not able to sit and read a long book anymore. You know, Nicholas Carr, who wrote the book The Shallows, talked about, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and his attention begins to wander after 2 or 3 pages of a book. And these are adult writers who if we've been impacted, think about our children.
Yeah. This is one of the things that I always bring up when we have conversations around these types of topics, is that we are adults that, and many of us were educated in a much more traditional format and where we had that grounding. And so not only do these kids not all have that grounding, but they're children. And if we have trouble managing the amount of phone use and the amount of computer use and the amount of screen time and not getting sucked in and scrolling through Facebook or scrolling through Twitter, how do we expect our children to have that kind of self-control?
That's right. That's exactly right.
And then when we don't, then we see the effects and then we wonder where it's coming from. And it's just really unfortunate for the children's learning.
Well, and I think in your book you discuss, and I don't know if it was your quote or I believe it was a section where I was reading about Dr. Victoria Dunkley's work, where it just talked about the hyper arousing nature of the media we are on, and that basically once you're used to being immersed in this sparkly, fast moving, great adrenaline type media, all of a sudden doing math homework Just, I mean, you don't ever, who really wants to do math homework? I mean, ever. Really. But, right. I mean, now you're setting up an additional hurdle for your child.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Remember the old Charlie Brown teacher, the womp, womp, womp. You know? Good luck, Miss Willoughby, teaching algebra if you've got 10 gamers in your classroom who are used to, like, flying galactic missions in inner, yes, in outer space, and now you're trying to teach them 2x plus 3x.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a hurdle because it just makes the classroom or the reading experience boring.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think, like I said, the last article, or when I talked about this topic way back in the early years of this show, it was Victoria Dunkley that I was quoting. And what I remember her saying is that she is seeing a huge increase in young men, especially, who are experiencing failure to launch because they're gaming and they get so much dopamine from that doing anything that would lead to success in life is just doesn't even compare. It's boring. They don't even want to pursue it. And so they're literally sitting in parents', you know, basements
and
or living rooms.
And I might add, it takes effort. And they've been conditioned to not put any effort in. They've been couch surfing in the basement. So now the thought of having to actually put one foot ahead of the other, that's two-thirds of the clients that we work with. We have to essentially, my wife likes to call it adulting, we have to teach them how to adult.
Yes, yeah.
They haven't been conditioned to stick-to-itivism because of the instant gratification nature of everything that we've raised them on. One of the things that I don't think I've ever really heard mentioned, but that I've noticed quite a bit, was when we talked about kids or children that are raised on with, again, this highly intensive very intensive visual imagery. When I've worked with those kids and they try to read something, you know how when you read something in a book, it's a pretty amazing process. So you're taking, you know, black squiggly lines and you're transmuting them into your mind's eye, into imagery, right? You're reading a sentence, and that sentence then becomes visual imagery.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the high screen kids that I've worked with that were teenagers or young adults that had a high screen diet, they can't do that. They talk about when they read, they can't visualize it. The words are like kind of like squiggly lines on the page, and their ability to translate those squiggly lines into visual images, it's never developed. It's atrophied. They're so used to getting the visual imagery pumped into their brain from the screen that they don't have. And so I've said to a few of them, I've said, can you not read? Oh, no, we can read. Like, they could read out loud. They could say, you know, look at spot, run.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't visualize spot. They can't see it in their mind's eye. And I found that to be very shocking and amazing and very underreported. Like, people don't talk about that as much, the part that they're not able to use their imagination unless it's pre-baked for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. That is just absolutely heartbreaking. And think of the effects then on our culture with that. If they aren't able to imagine, if they're not able to create. And, you know, I'm going way off in a corner here, but we have a parent who is on our board who is a physician at the University of Minnesota, and she's actually a professor there in the medical school as well. And they're a top medical school. And one of the things that she's noticed in the last, you know, 15 years or so, 10, maybe 10, is that the students who are coming into this prestigious medical school don't know how to think. She said they know how to research. They can do anything, look anything up on Google. They can research and find you information, but they don't know how to think. And that's actually one of the reasons why she chose to send her children to our school, because she wanted to make sure that her children knew how to think. And
interesting.
And think of the impact that has on a nation. You know, we've always historically been known as this great
innovators,
exactly, in every realm, in medicine and in finance and science and just all across the board. And if we now have a population that's been raised on screens and YouTube videos and TikTok and you know, they don't know how to create and think and have imagination, That's really going to affect our country.
Oh, absolutely. So two things come to mind that are on point with what you said, because I do think that's so fascinating about your board members' mm-hmm. insights about the ability to think.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to where the classical education comes in, the ability to think and critically think. There was a book that was written about the origins of Silicon Valley and how that was really, you know, it was a cauldron of innovation. It was the garage boys, you know, from Sergey Brin and Larry Page to Jeff Bezos, they all were tinkering in the garage, highly innovative, you know, mm-hmm. because big tech before Silicon Valley was IBM and Hewlett-Packard, and it was corporate and institutional. And so this spirit of innovation, and what this book talked about was that back in when Medvedev was president of Russia, thank
mm-hmm.
you, he and his team went out to study Silicon Valley, because even though they had the same sort of technological achievements, or they had stolen or borrowed from the United States, he said, as a culture, they weren't able to think. They weren't able to sort of figure out. So they weren't innovators. And so they wanted to go to Silicon Valley to find out what's in the special sauce that creates innovation. And what they decided was a very uniquely sort of American garage phenomenon, you know, the sort of bootstrap American spirit of innovation, where if you're grown mm-hmm. up in an autocratic sort of communist dehumanizing study, you're not thinking outside the box. And mm-hmm. so it wasn't something that they could bottle and bring over to Russia, because it was baked into the cultural DNA to not be innovative and entrepreneurial. But ironically, those innovators in those garages of Silicon Valley have now created the product that's now sedated us all
exactly.
and destroyed our innovation.
Exactly. And is
yeah.
creating a very autocratic society, you know, even by limiting what can be discussed on social media. And that's a you know, another conversation that we've had many times, too.
You mean Big Brother?
Yes. Well, and, you know, it's interesting because I have actually heard word that China, I have not verified this, but I have heard that China actually limits how much time their youth can spend.
They do. They turn it off and I think it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Which
And also China's TikTok is very different than ours. You know,
yes.
I worked
right.
with Congressman Gus Bilirakis, is the Florida congressman who was grilling the TikTok CEO a couple of months ago. I don't know if
uh-huh.
you saw it.
I did.
He bought this family whose son had committed suicide from Long Island. Oh, I worked with Congressman Bilirakis, he and his staff, in terms of giving him some insights about how damaging social media was. But he was mm-hmm. the one who bought up and showed. So Chinese TikTok is very STEM oriented, and U.S. mm-hmm. TikTok is kill yourself, toxic,
right.
and if you had to really destroy a society, and I know this sounds a bit conspiratorial, but let's not let our
right.
our competitor country get the good stuff. Let's
yep.
we're going to keep the good TikTok for ourselves, and we're going to give them the stuff that's poison.
Absolutely.
Poison.
And that is not conspiratorial. We actually had the president of
Victims of Communism
on for a couple of shows, and he actually came to speak at our school, and he said, oh, it is absolutely intentional. Mm-hmm. And he said, they are at war with us. We just haven't acknowledged it. And, you know,
yeah.
it's a different form of war, and Americans are naive. We're trusting people. We think that, you know, certainly nobody would ever do that to our kids.
Who was it that said that?
Ken Pope is the president of Victims of Communism
Foundation
in Washington, D.C. Yeah, he'd be a great connection for you to make.
They have a lot of great survivor stories. They connect with people all over the world who have fled and rebuilt their lives after experiencing communism.
Yeah.
They are a fantastic organization.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the opening of your show with the Abraham Lincoln quote about the generation in the classroom is going to be the generation that's leading. And because, you know, speaking of Russian
right.
by design, there was, you know, there is that fascinating video. There was that KGB dissident that came over to the United States in the 1970s. And there's a couple of YouTube videos of his talks.
Yeah.
He died in the late 1980s. But he lays out the blueprints. He talks about.
Yes.
Invading a country takes one generation. And he was talking about, first you invade their academic institutions,
mm-hmm.
you attack the culture from within, and we do, you know, we do not need tanks to dominate the United States of America. We need to destroy them from, you know, it's
yeah.
destruction from within. And he laid out the KGB playbook, which was eerily prescient to exactly what's happening today in terms of everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
fragility and no critical thinking, and up is down, down is up.
Yep.
And in the classroom, the nonsense that's going on in public school classrooms right now,
yeah.
If that's going to be the next generation, you know, when I hear you say that in the opening of the show, it's a powerful quote, but it's also sad because not very good things are happening in the mainstream classroom right now.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I think I saw that video.
Your school is so critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was the end of our little segment that we had here on our wonderful interview with Dr. Cardaris. And obviously at the very end, we got a little bit off topic there. We started out on talking about ADHD and the influence of screens, and I think ended a little bit sideways. But the important thing about that is where screens and where social media can lead. And I think that was the point that he was making.
Yes.
But one of the points that he made right before those last few minutes is that if you look at a lot of these big tech individuals, they are choosing to send their children to schools that don't use screens.
Yes.
That don't use technology. And not only are they aware of the fact that that limits their maybe creativity, but they're also aware that it changes their ability to focus and study. And they want the kids reading books. You know, there was actually a research study that showed that if children read from a screen versus reading actual paper, their ability to remember and retain what they read is not nearly as strong as it is when you read from paper. So these big tech individuals know this, and many of them are choosing to send their children to low tech schools. And, you know, I think that that says a lot right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very contrary to what I think people generally think about for their kids. They think, well, I want my child in a school or in a setting, educational setting, with the most, with the latest tech. That will give them the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'd love for our listeners to understand, and what I think we are seeing played out in real time, is that's not actually true. Mm-hmm. That the people that have been in a low tech or even no tech setting in these formative years are actually going to have superior abilities to connect the dots, to build those, that focus, the ability to focus and have concentration and think through complex issues, which then, of course, will give them the edge later on in life.
Right, right. There was actually a research study done by Dr. Jane Healy, and she was looking at, actually, she's the author of Failure to Connect, How Computers Affect Our Children's Minds. And after years of doing research into the computer use in schools, she expected to find that computers in the classroom would actually be beneficial to learning.
Mm-hmm.
But what she found is exactly the opposite. And she was actually dismayed by the lack of research indicating any benefit whatsoever. And she now feels strongly that the time on the computer might actually interfere with development of everything from the young child's motor skills to his or her ability to think logically and distinguish between reality and fantasy. That's a direct quote from her book. And so this isn't just a matter of, oh, you know, do you use computers or do you not use computers, you know, almost like, you know, tomato, tomato. These have very significant effects on children's learning, which route you go. And I think it's, as you pointed out, Abigail, it's so easy for the modern parent to think, oh, I've got to make sure that my child is up on all of the technology and, you know, make sure that they're in a school that's using the 21st century, you know, best technology. And yet here it is right in front of you. This research, extensive research, says the time on the computer might actually interfere with development of everything from the young child's motor skills to his or her ability to think logically and distinguish between reality and fantasy.
Yep.
Pretty frightening.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think that we need to, you know, as we're kind of discussing today, we, you know, some of this discussion was around, you know, why are we seeing such a rise in ADHD in mm-hmm. schools? And, you know, Rebecca and I are not physicians, so we're not going to attempt to, you know, diagnose children. However, it's been very interesting to do reading on this subject and simply realize that, like most things, there isn't an easy answer. Oftentimes it is multifaceted, but what a great starting point if you are a parent and you are concerned about, you know, is my child getting sucked into this phone, into this tablet? Are they spending too much time? Why is it that they don't want to read books? Mm-hmm. I would encourage you, do a tech fast. Mm-hmm. See if it helps. Mm-hmm. That was something that Dr. Carteras suggests in his book, Glow Kids, is mm-hmm. there's so much of this. There's a high level of correlation between usage time on the internet and really different mental disorders such mm-hmm. as ADHD, such as anxiety, things like that. Do a tech fast and mm-hmm. see if that improves their situation. But I mean, really, who is going to sit down and read a book if you can watch a super fun movie or play a really cool game online that is literally designed to hold your attention? Mm-hmm. And we are in charge, parents. We need to decide that this is a battle worth having. We can only control what, you know, is happening in our home, obviously. But to prioritize, and I'll be very frank, you know, this conversation always makes me think, what am I modeling for mm-hmm. my children? Do they see me looking at, you know, on my computer, on my phone, far more than they see me reading a book, writing notes by hand? So for sure, you know, we are preaching to ourselves with this. But, you know, mm-hmm. our goal is always with these discussions not to tell listeners what they should do in their homes, but to just have facts. Mm-hmm. Know that this technology is shaping your brain. It is shaping your child's brain. It's designed to do that. And we're learning more and more that it really is. It is physically shaping your mind. It's shaping how the myelin sheath is operating, how your brain is able to talk to itself. And then you get to decide. Mm-hmm. You get to decide how to, you know, integrate technology into your life. But our goal is to always provide that information mm-hmm. and then you get to choose.
Mm-hmm. And just making sure that parents are aware that it isn't a decision like tomato versus tomato.
Yes.
That these are very significant decisions that you're making for your child. And if you're not making them, if it's just by default, you're sort of letting things sort of play out in your home, that, oh, suddenly you realize, oh my goodness, my child's on their phone all the time, or they're reading, or they're watching video or playing video games all the time. It's really easy to just let that set in. One of his recommendations here really quickly before we end the show today is that he recommends the Gab phone. And the mm-hmm. Gab phone is one that looks like a smartphone, but it does not connect to the Wi-Fi. It's G-A-B-B. And I would highly recommend that parents look into that, because obviously the kids don't like to look funny if you give them a flip phone. They're embarrassed by that. And so this is an opportunity to give them something that looks the same but acts quite a bit differently and helps limit the screen time. Well, Dr. Carteras has come out with his second book called Digital Madness. And Digital Madness is really talking a lot about what he discusses as digital dementia. And that name alone just really helps us understand the serious nature of what is happening to our brains when we spend so much time on the screens. So we will definitely be having Dr. Carteras back again next fall to talk further about his second book, right, Abigail?
Yes, absolutely. We hope he will continue to be as generous with his time as he was with us today. And I hope, listeners, that you really appreciated his point of view, but it's because it is based in years and years and years of working with children and families and going through the data-driven research. This is not a weird conspiracy theory. This is actually happening to our brains. So we need to think about, all right, what are the next steps?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, I hope you join us again next week on Education America. And in the meantime, you can go to our website, savetheclassroom.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And also listen to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. See you next week.
Have a great night, everyone.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.